All right, thanks. This one's going to be a little different. I'm actually going to split my time with my co-author, Ariel Soji. And unlike the titles, which says the nutrient recovery technologies first, I'm actually going to talk about reuse of these recovered fertilizer or nutrients as fertilizer. I'm going to talk about that first, and then Ariel's going to get up here and talk about the technologies to recover them. So I don't have to spend a whole lot of time justifying why we're considering recovering nutrients. We saw this Sunday night, the world dead zones in the ocean. We've got to do a better job of nutrient management, especially around these high animal or hot areas with lots of confined animal, large animal feeding operations. But in addition to just the environmental aspects, our mine nutrients, we know we've got a finite source. And they're going to run out eventually, even though they say there's quite a few years left for most of them. And then just the cost of fertilizers in time, the ability to recover the nutrients might catch up with the cost of mining them. So what I'm going to talk about today are the three kinds of recovered nutrients. First, the struvites, then some. I'm going to talk about some calcium phosphate. Recovered nutrients from swine and swine wastewater and chicken litter, and then I'm going to finish up with a couple slides on turkey litter ash. Okay, struvite. Just a couple slides on struvite. Struvite is being researched a lot now as a way to recycle phosphorus from manures and other wastes, especially municipal wastes. The common form that's precipitated, you can see there, in that form, it's about 6% nitrogen, 29% phosphate, and about 10% magnesium. One of the characteristics of these materials is they have low water solubility, but they are soluble in acid. They're actually precipitated out of the waste stream at a relatively high pH. Here's a really recent paper, 2016, if I can find my mouse, in Resources Conservation and Recycling Journal, where they recently reviewed all the literature on struvites recovery and reuse as fertilizers. And I just pulled out some of the findings. And these are... the struvite sources were swine wastewater for these four papers, dairy wastewater, swine manure, and then municipal sewage sludge. And really, the bottom line from that paper is that the struvites were pretty much equally effective to these other phosphorus sources, equally effective with superphosphate and urea in that corn paper. And similar for the other ones. Now, the one exception was that canola paper they found. They found similar pea uptake, but lower biomass per unit pea in that work. And that happened to be Canadian soil. That was a pH of 7.7. So the struvite didn't get into the soil solution nearly as quick. Quick summary on the struvite in alkaline soils: less P available because the struvite is less soluble. But in acid soils, less than 7, the P uptake was similar with plant growth to more water soluble fertilizers. Interestingly, there is almost one or two of the 50 or so papers they reviewed were field data. Everything was in the greenhouse. So we really need more research under field conditions with these struvites. Okay, at our lab, a process, and Ariel did this, developed a process to recover phosphorus from swine wastewater and from broiler litter. And Ariel will talk about this quite in depth in a few minutes, but in the bottom of the picture on the left, you can see the system they developed, and at the end, they precipitated out phosphorus, and here's some just bags of this phosphorus material that they recovered. The material is hydroxyl apatite and amorphous calcium phosphate. Here is the constituents and the percentage in the material. For the phosphate, it's about 25%, calcium's about 27%, a little bit of potassium, and a little bit of magnesium. Now, he also developed a process for pulling the phosphorus out of chicken litter. And they patented this as the quick wash process. And this is the concentrations of nutrients that he gets out of the quick wash process. About 13.5% phosphate, 2% nitrogen, 13% calcium, a little magnesium, potassium, and sodium. So I got involved. I'm an agronomist, so I got involved in looking at these materials as a fertilizer source. And in the first experiments we did a greenhouse experiments with ryegrass, annual ryegrass, just like everybody else was doing with the struvites, I guess. We sized the material into two different sizes. This is from the wastewater, half a millimeter to a millimeter, and then the larger particle size of 2 to 4 millimeters. And then we compared that with triple superphosphate, the two swine wastewater recovered phosphorus sizes. We also had phosphorus recovered from broiler litter, and that was a small size. And in this experiment, we also had broiler litter. And here's the data comparing the two sizes of the swine wastewater. This white squares is the data line for triple superphosphate. The red line is the small particle size. The green line is the large particle size. And across the bottom, we have the different phosphorus rates, and this is the phosphorus uptake. And as you can see, the small particle size, this was only a little 7-week test, but the small particle size did give us plenty of phosphorus. We didn't have any difference in biomass. This is mostly pea concentration in the plants between these two. And whereas the large particle size, though, didn't matter how much we put into the soil and mixed it in, it pretty much was the same uptake, maybe a little bit out here. For the material recovered from the broiler litter, here's the triple superphosphate line again. And that material had pretty much the exact same line of pea uptake as spreading poultry litter by itself. So they're pretty good pea phosphorus materials mixed in with soil, even in the short term. Now, this material is also not water soluble, but it's highly citrate soluble, so it's plant available, 99% citrate soluble, but only 0.5% water soluble. But again, most of it's plant available. So we took this material to the field and we did a no-till study with the material recovered from swine wastewater. And what we did in this study was we put in anion resin blocks in the soil. We put 2 per plot to measure the exchangeable phosphorus. This would be the water soluble in the surface 4 inches of the soil. The blocks were removed and replaced every month. And we did this we put out the fertilizer in our plots. We drilled the rye cover crop, then we put the blocks in, and then we planted cotton afterwards. And so the data in this next graph is just kind of relative data because it's related to the resin blocks. But you can see, as we expected, a month after we applied the material, large amount, and we use diammonium phosphate as our control, large amount of water-soluble phosphate right away, whereas with our two recovered phosphates, not near as much. Same thing in the second year. Second year we had a really big rain right afterwards. And this was all surface applied. That phosphorus material got into the soil right away, and you can see the data on down through the year. Kind of what we'd expect from a water-soluble material versus a non-water-soluble material. But here, this is kind of interesting. This is the plant available phosphorus of the surface for soils every month. When we pulled the resin blocks, we also went through the plot and pulled soil samples. As you can see, first year the study was on a sandy loam. Here's the DAP. Here's the small particle size, the larger particle size, and then the non-fertilized control. And as we got into spring, just before planting, the small particle size started to increase later in the season. And on the sand, I don't know why that number is so high, but on the sand, we saw the same thing. We saw the phosphorus levels increase as this material got more and more into the soil, is what I'm guessing, whereas it didn't increase as such with the DAP. Okay, but with the large particle size, one thing we saw was that the particles stayed on the soil surface, being non-water soluble. They stayed on the surface a really long time. Here's 9 months after application. We still had, we could find the particles pretty easily. They had about the same phosphorus content as when we put them out. And then after another cover crop and another cotton crop, we could still find a few. And they still had all the phosphorus in them. So in a no-till situation, this is going to be a very slow-release material. The smaller particle size, I think they got in the soil just fine. Couple words about poultry litter ash. There's a couple of facilities beginning to produce ash in North Carolina, and they're going to start this year. And I know there's one in Benson, Minnesota. Ash content, and this is a shot of the inside of the plant in North Carolina. And it's nice and new, so it's clean. The concentration of turkey litter ash is about 27%. P205, 16% available P205, and about 14% potash. Crop responses to poultry litter ash. Again, a lot of this is in the literature, is in controlled environment, but there's a few papers out there showing it's not as good as commercial fertilizers, although this one study down here, they found equal treatment. We're not working on so much as the phosphorus availability. What we're looking at with it is experiments looking how we're going to spread this stuff. Once they get a warehouse full of this stuff, how are we going to spread this stuff with commercial equipment? We were asked to do this by the company working with the plants. So we've got a couple of potential sources right next to us, just down the road in Myrtle Beach. There's a calcitic lime quarry where they put in a ag lime crushing facility. So we're looking at that material, possibly to mix it, and we're also looking at gypsum. We got a lot of gypsum in the region. The idea being these will be a little wet, and they can spread these with the lime trucks then and put the ash out with their commercial fertilizers. And what we've basically seen so far, we haven't tested it with the trucks because they haven't burned enough ash yet, but in small tests, the ash just sticks to the lime and it just spreads pretty nicely. We mix, and for this particular experiment, we mix the ash 3-to-1 with the lime or the gypsum, and just buried them in some pots and let them sit for a month, either mixed with the soil, or we left the material on the soil surface and watered it in. And basically what you can see is really no difference between the ash, the calcitic lime, or using the gypsum as the carrier for either P or K. So the phosphorus in the ash is also highly water insoluble. So moving on, there's some data in the literature, and it's mixed. I'm showing this graph in particular, where phosphorus losses and runoff are related to the water solubility of the materials. And as you can see, in this particular data, you can see they had four materials, either zero, no water solubility, medium, medium high, and high. And you can see the total P and total P loss and soluble phosphorus loss is related to the solubility of the material. Now, if the ash or the fertilizer pellets get up in the water and float away, that'll be a totally different thing with these materials. So we really need to look at the environmental impact and the fate of these materials that are land applied from these recovered nutrients. And so that's one thing that needs a lot of research. Other summaries from just my part of the talk, in a lot of these materials there's very limited field data. So more work is needed, but recovered nutrients are going to play a more important role due to both the economical and the environmental considerations. And finally, the recovered phosphorus, either a struvite, ash, or calcium phosphate, is less soluble, and so particle size is going to be very important when they're being used. Come on up.
Well, this part we changed the talk in order to talk a little bit about the phosphorus recovery technologies, and just to give a summary of what is out there, so you can recognize some of the technologies that some of them are already on the commercial phase. Most of them are related to now to municipalities that are trying to reduce their phosphorus output. And you're going to find, if you look in the internet, there are a lot of different technologies into the recovery of phosphorus. And but I'm going to refer only to three of them that, and there are a lot of other that are experimental and not coming out of the laboratories yet, had not been applied. But this one, the first one is the chemical precipitation. And when we're talking about chemical precipitation of phosphates, you can find iron and aluminum phosphates, magnesium ammonium phosphate, this struvite that we talked about, and calcium phosphate. There are some other compounds, different minerals that form as calcium phosphate and also as magnesium phosphate, but I will focus on a few of them that are the most common in the literature. When you go into iron and aluminum phosphate, generally they are found related to municipal treatment plants. They use alum, which is aluminum sulfate, or iron chloride to remove phosphorus from an activated sludge. There are water and soluble phosphates, very unsoluble, and low in plant available phosphorus, and in general limited. They have limited use as fertilizers. So I'm not going to talk more about that, but that's just to give you an idea that iron phosphates are not so good for trying to use them as fertilizer sources. But they are there. They are with the biosolids. In Europe, in Japan, biosolids are also incinerated and therefore in form of ash, much more concentrated in phosphorus, but also quite insoluble aluminum phosphates and iron phosphates with those ashes of biosolids. So the other interesting thing is that with the struvite, not only you can recover phosphorus, but also some ammonia. About 6% of the struvite is ammonium. Generally, these magnesium phosphates are formed or the struvite under high ammonium concentrations in liquid waste and at an alkaline pH. And also, most of the technologies to recover them requires a nucleation material, which actually is some type of particles that will be in the liquid in order to allow the struvite to precipitate and form aggregates. Just to give you an idea of some of those things that are commercially available out there are the crystallizers. Those, you can find that in earlier literature of precipitation of the struvite, or also more common now to call it as fluidized bed. It basically is a vessel with a certain type of shape, conical shape most of the time, and where wastewater comes from the bottom, and in the fluidized bed, because it's put with pressure, and the magnesium chloride and sodium hydroxide to increase the pH are injected into the waste stream, and because there are some particles that for nucleation, there is some aggregation, and then the struvite is being formed and separated from the liquid by gravity. So the water comes out with nutrient-reduced wastewater out of these reactors. So this is just to give you an idea of what is out there. There are several companies already offering this type of technology, particularly in the municipal waste treatment, but also there are some applications also for animal manure. The other interesting material that we have worked before is the calcium phosphate. Oops, I have to go back. Is amorphous calcium phosphate, which is actually a precursor of the hydroxylapatite. So under high concentrations of calcium and high concentrations of phosphate, it's possible to precipitate calcium phosphate. The pure hydroxylapatite or amorphous calcium phosphate has high content of phosphorus, 38 to 42%. And what is the amorphous calcium phosphate? You can see there two different X-ray diffraction there, one without any peak, and that's amorphous calcium, and the only way that we know that is because we analyze for phosphorus, the sample. And the other one is the hydroxyapatite, and it shows peaks, and that's showing that there is a mineral crystal that is the hydroxyapatite. The interesting thing is that it's possible to precipitate calcium phosphate, but it's very difficult to just adding calcium to the waste. You start to have all kinds of problems with the precipitation. You start forming calcium carbonate, and the phosphorus continues being in solution. So, in our laboratories, we develop a treatment system that uses biological nitrification first to remove ammonia from the animal wastewater, and after that, adding lime in form of calcium hydroxide or magnesium. As a matter of fact, it's possible to precipitate a phosphate. And that's, this is the phosphate that were the matter of the experiments on plant availability that we did with Dr. Bauer, he presented earlier. So the phosphorus recovery concept for in the case of calcium phosphate is the elimination of certain natural buffers with biological treatment and then precipitated with an alkaline base, calcium or magnesium. This, you already saw this picture, and there is a phosphorus recovery module that we tested at full scale in a farm in Duplin County, North Carolina. And this is an schematic drawing of that phosphorus separation and bagging of calcium phosphate. I'm not going into too much detail of that, except to show you that that was the blueprint of the system where we were doing where a phosphorus separation module was custom built in order to recover the calcium phosphate. I'm going to refer briefly to thermochemical processes, particularly pyrolysis, which is a thermal treatment without oxygen. And there is an entire community on biochar, so if you want to know more about that. But one thing I can say about this is that when the pyrolysis, we include feedstocks that are animal manures, the biochar that is coming out of that contains significant amount of phosphorus. So that could be a source of phosphorus if it's land applied. Of course, it's not completely pure phosphorus because there is carbon and there are other salts with the biochar. But I just wanted to make sure that that also can be considered a way of recovering some phosphorus. There is also the process when the thermal with high temperature combustion and there is oxygen involved, then you have incineration. And that's the poultry-liter ash that Dr. Bauer presented earlier. So these technologies are coming up, and they're already in the commercial phase. We also worked on doing wet extractions. What do we do when we have a slurry or we have like poultry-liter? Can we extract the phosphorus as well? The wet extraction has been done in the past, or still is done in Europe, to extract phosphorus, for example, from the municipal biosolid incinerated ash. But we look at doing the wet extraction directly from the manure. That could have an interesting advantage. That you don't destroy the organic matter, you conserve carbon, you conserve a pretty good fraction of nitrogen, and then phosphorus can extract it. So there is a commercial development of this process that we develop in our lab, and it's called the quick wash. And human, in those biosolids and wastewater, it's possible to extract phosphorus and have a product with low phosphorus biosolids, which is the washed material, and then by phosphorus precipitation with calcium hydroxide, it's possible to obtain a calcium phosphate material. The quick wash process, where do we come with that idea? Well, the idea, the concept came from the white lupin. This plant thrives in soils with low available phosphorus, where other plants will not grow. Interestingly, it produces abundant organic acids to extract the low available phosphorus from soil. So we refined the concept into a new chemical process to recover phosphorus from manure and municipal sludge. So the wash manure soil residue has more balanced nitrogen-phosphorus ratio for that application. At agronomic nitrogen rate, and we can obtain a concentrated phosphorus material that then can be moved out of the farm or the areas where we have too much phosphorus to other places where we need it. We did laboratory tests of the wet extraction and phosphorus recovery and established the technical feasibility of the process. And then we came up, what is the process? Where a sludge or a solid manure, or could be also biosolid, goes through selected phosphorus extraction with that produces a washed solid residue. Then it goes into precipitation, and then there is a process of enhancing the precipitation in order to recover that phosphorus, and comes out a liquid low in phosphorus. We did a pilot testing. We were requested by the USDA that if we want to move this forward and transfer this technology, we need to demonstrate this in a pilot unit. We did. This is basically what it is, a couple of tanks mixing with acid first and then extracting the phosphorus. Now this process now is being licensed by a company called Renewal Nutrients, and the wet extraction, this is the blueprint basically of the process, where the animal and sanitary waste enters on one side, acid is added in the tank, it's mixed, then it goes through solid separation, and we have they call it engineered biosolids, because we have a nitrogen-phosphorus ratio good for the plant that will not accumulate phosphorus in the soil. And then the liquid leftover is treated with lime and a polymer for phosphorus precipitation, and then extracted phosphorus after a second solid separation with a cleaner effluent. So this is the pilot treatment plant that this company has, and they can move and demonstrate for their clients the quick wash process. And that's one of the ways that they are trying to commercialize, or they are commercializing this process, not only for animal waste, but also for a lot of interest from municipalities about reducing phosphorus in the final discharge of the treatment plant. The summary, the wet extraction, it can extract and recover about 80% of phosphorus in poultry litter and soy animal manure. Low phosphorus wash residue can be land applied on a nitrogen basis. The approach is equally effective for recovering phosphorus from municipal biosolids and also animal manure. And USDA granted exclusive license of a patent to Renewal Nutrients and Company in North Carolina. And just to give you an idea of how much nitrogen we have left in the wash side, about 5.5% nitrogen, the nitrogen-phosphorus ratio of 5.5. Usually, manures and biosolids have a nitrogen-phosphorus ratio of 2:1. That's why we have accumulation of phosphorus in all the soils that we apply in excess manure, because we land apply it on a nitrogen basis. And in this case, that particular sample contains 18.5 phosphorus. So it looks pretty good as a concentrated phosphate material. And with that, I think that we can entertain some questions. don't know. We probably, that's a good idea. It's something that probably Phil can answer, because that's one of the things that we were talking recently about, how we can make this a little bit more reactive at the beginning of the season. So. Well, the whole thing depends on, will be on the adoption of these technologies. The systems that now exist that are coming closer for being implemented in farms is due to the economics. That's why if you go into search for this treatment system, you're going to find a lot more with the municipalities. Now, one thing I can tell you, if we can end up having this on certain farms that we can record this, we are going to have an excellent product, probably better than what comes out of the municipalities, because the animal manure is low in heavy metals versus the wastewater that is coming out of the municipalities. So, we are trailing behind, of course, in implementing this type of systems, but they're coming. There is a very high interest from EPA right now on nutrient recycling, particularly coming from dairy and swine manure. I think there will be certain incentives. This is in the process of moving forward. On the case of the wash material, we are assessing that right now. After we treat it with acid, we kill a lot of microbes, the good ones and the bad ones. One thing that we found is that when you apply this to soil, this is only just some lab experiments that we just started. We find that. Compare, for example, if I poultry manure that if you land apply, you will have a lot of ammonia volatilization. These products tend to keep the nitrogen in the organic form and have less volatilization. So I think slowly we're going to, with the research that we will be doing in the next few years, we're going to understand better how this material. But we were measuring mineralization, and the mineralization was optimal. So the microbes are using it, but we are going to have less problem with probably with the ammonia volatilization because of the form of the nitrogen changes. It's a product that comes out of a chemical process. It's a process.